It's Celtics coverage on CLNSradio.com.
Sensational move from Kyrie Irving. Oh, Hayward. Horford lays it up and in.
Dial in right now and share your thoughts toll free. 347-215-7771.
Hey, you heard the man. 347-215-7771. Welcome to the Celtics postgame show here on CLNS Media Network. We got Keith Smith down in Orlando as the Celtics take down the Magic in convincing fashion, 104-88. Magic 6-4. The Celtics, believe it or not, we all thought this was going to be a struggle for them out of the gate with this new look team, with Marcus Morris getting back into the swing of things these last few nights, with Gordon Hayward going down. And just like that, they're on their longest win streak of the Brad Stevens era. 8 straight wins for the Celtics. They're at the top of the East. They're playing in their prime on both ends of the floor. And tonight was kind of the encapsulation of all of that. And with me tonight, who has been my sideman for most of these shows so far, Taylor McLeod, as well as Nick Sesento in the booth. He'll be joining us in just a second to give us his thoughts on the team so far. What's your big takeaway from tonight, Taylor?
I think it showed you that the Magic are a pretender and not a contender. I think the Celtics, I mean, people were talking about the Magic, you know, because they had a that they might give the Celtics somewhat of a challenge, and it just wasn't there. No one from the Seas played really well, not except outside of Jaylen Brown, but it just wasn't a challenge.
Yeah, and what stuck out to me tonight and what I'm going to hit on for most of tonight, I usually find a point I harp on for most of the night, and we're going to be joined by Nick Gelso at some point tonight as well, is that this was a murky win. This was a tough, untraditional win for the Celtics team. I don't think Kyrie Irving and Al Horford, for that matter, as well, were able to really get into the swing of their offense tonight the way they did Friday night in that crazy win over the Thunder. I think Sesento had the post-game show that night. That was sensational. But tonight was different. They had to win a different way. They had to get in the post-ups. They had to get into the transition game a little bit, which wasn't always at its best tonight. But they got tough, tough baskets. And in a game that I thought was hard-nosed basketball, gritty, in the mud, they got over 100 points playing that kind of game, and that blew me away tonight. Good play from Marcus Smart, who was a plus 32. You never see that, especially in a game where they only won by, you know, double digits. It was a 16-point win, and he's a plus 32. He doubled the score they won by. And I was hard on Smart going into tonight, but he reminded me the kind of player he is and the kind of value he brings to this team. When things get down and dirty, he makes those plays. 8 assists, 8 rebounds, and a ton of defense to boot. I haven't been that high on Smart to start this year, Taylor, but tonight, can't complain.
No, you definitely can't. I've been really hard on Smart. I've been on this year just talking to you in general. You know, I can't get a read on this guy's offensive. He does some stupid stuff, but then he just gets pissed off and brings Jonathan Isaac, a 7-footer, in the post, posts him up, gets a bucket, and the next person drills a 3 from the top of the circle. You know, it doesn't make any sense, but with the winning plays and the plus-minus, I'll take it from him.
Yeah, and people like to give or take that plus-minus. You cannot argue against a plus 32 on the game. Horford tonight, who I've been high on for much of the season, just wasn't himself tonight. 6 turnovers. I think that was only the third such game of his career I saw where he had that many turnovers. So like I said, they had to get a little untraditional with the way they were attacking tonight. It was a chaotic game, which kind of boded well for Jaylen Brown, I think, who had 18 points, 7 rebounds, very strong showing from him. And how about Marcus Morris? 3-13 to start the Celtics' career, and he ends the night 4-10 with another strong game. Danny Ainge said they wouldn't have won Friday without him. And the shooting numbers, the percentages are not going to look good through these first two games, but he has made plays. That double-clutch mid-ranger he hit through contact was just wild. But it seems like he has those wild shots in him, and that's kind of going to be the style of his game between him and Marcus Smart. It's going to be the Marcus shot chuckers between those two, but every once in a while you're going to scream no and it's going to go in, and that just seems to be what you got to get used to with those guys.
Yeah, for sure. You know, Marcus Morris missed a couple of games, and I figured he'd come back looking a little rusty. One thing that surprised me about him, though, is that he moves much better than I thought he did. I always thought he was kind of a slower, bulkier player. But, you know, he makes those, you know, over-the-right-shoulder fall-away on the baseline shot look pretty athletic. So that's exciting. You know, a big plus for him.
Yeah, and he's not going to play tomorrow night in the back-to-back against the Hawks. But I'm interested to see just how they deploy him. Stevens has been using him in crunch time minutes and very crucial minutes throughout the stretch of these games. And when those hard defensive assignments come on the wing, I want to see what he looks like in those, because I've said it again, I watched a lot of tape on him coming into the season. The defense comes and goes. Everyone gets stuck on that moment where he locked down LeBron down the stretch of one of those games. But there's also the circumstances where he gets taken advantage of, too, for just lack of effort on that end. And, you know, the shot chucking gets to me. I can't stand shot chuckers, and this guy definitely is one of those. And he's good. He's good at hitting those from all areas of the floor, which I guess I can deal with. But there's going to be nights where this guy just drives you crazy, because Stevens, when he trusts these guys, he trusts them till the end. And even if they're throwing shots off the backboard, he's just going to keep running them. So he had a 23 solid minutes tonight, started 0-5, and finished strong with the 4-5 finish. So I'll take it. 7 rebounds. And how about the rebounding so far, Taylor? We expected it to be better, but it looks like a strength of this team from top to bottom. Tatum, Horford, Morris, Brown is strong on the boards. Baines, Smart, Rozier, Tice. They have rebounders up and down this lineup. And is it going to be a strength of this team going forward, do you think?
It certainly looks like it. Now, I think I know you love Isaiah, but I think a little bit taller point guard, that's going to open up some more board opportunities for Kyrie. You've got two wings who are 6'8".
You
got
a nice
8,
zero
six,
tonight.
No, I know. But what I'm just saying in general, you know, you're adding a lot more height. And then you've got guys who just play the boards like Baines and Tice. Horford, they tried to play Horford at the five a lot last year, or at least play him alongside Amir, but Amir couldn't jump. You've got two guys in Baines and Tice who are willing – somewhat athletic, and they're willing to fight for boards, and they're getting a lot of stops and a lot of missed shots, so the boards are going to be there, and they're cleaning up on the glass lately.
Yeah, and this game, again, showed just how the Celtics team can adapt to the situations that have been thrown at them. Just the look of this game tonight, and I don't know if you're going to agree with me on this, but it just, something was off tonight going in, and all the misses that were being thrown up early, and just how bad the Magic looked from outside. And the Magic really stunk tonight. You said coming into this, they're pretenders. It's hard to argue with that tonight with how they shot throughout this game from start to finish. Good looks from the outside, missed routinely. And you got to hand it to them. They didn't really have a facilitator on the ball tonight with Elfrid Payton out, which I guess speaks to their lack of depth. Shelvin Mack kind of stinks. And that's basically where their point guard play ends on that roster, which is amazing to think about, with how many good point guards in the league right now. But Evan Fournier, I spoke highly of him coming into tonight. He was off on everything he threw up. Gordon, it was an all right night, 18 and 12. Those are good numbers, but I didn't really feel him dig his fist into this game like he has in some of the other nights. You know, Vucevic was nice, a little nice double-double. Terrence Ross was terrible, typical shot-chucking self. And even Simmons got thrown out of the funk of things with foul trouble early. So I think where this team really gets exposed, Taylor, is that lack of depth. Take Payton out of the mold, and they basically look like an awful team tonight.
I agree. I agree. They're not deep. Struggle. And something you said, you know, it kind of fell off. And I think you're definitely right. There was a feeling of a hangover from the Thunder win on Friday night.
Yeah,
but, you know, they found another way to win. They locked in, played really good defense, held the Magic to 38 points in the first half, and then 88 points for the whole game, their eighth game, holding their opponent under 100. So, you know, they're finding ways to win. That's a sign of a real good team.
And people, I've said it again and again, have been taking Horford for granted with his impact on the game. But I just noticed again tonight, we have really taken Jason Tatum for granted with how impactful he has been on a night-to-night basis. Like, there has been no worries in my head going into any single game about how big of an impact he'll be on these games. Jaylen Brown, I feel a little differently. I feel like there's going to be some games where he's really impactful and then other games where he's just out of the swing of things. We've talked about this on here before. He has those spurts where he's great, and then once he gets down, he kind of stays down a little bit. But Tatum, it's the brutal consistency, night in and night out. I feel like he's going to be 13 to 18 every single game this season, and he's really going to dip below that 13-point mark where he was tonight. Very efficient night again. Takes advantage of the good looks he does get. Those open three-point shots have been where he has made his money. I think he's above 50% on the season now from three. Another 50%. Yep, 52 after another 50% shooting night from outside again tonight. That form, Kevin O'Connor talked about it. Can it stay consistent? I think you hit on it a little bit too. That high arc, the high release point, how hard that can be to keep consistent. But it's there. Every single, like, there is nothing to worry about with this guy. I have no worries myself. I've been high on him from the very beginning. And it just looks like a steal. He's not going to be rookie of the year, unfortunately, just with the way Simmons has been rolling like LeBron James. The shades of LeBron have been strong in him early on, as you have said to me a number of times. But is there any way Tatum's going to let us down at all this year? It just feels like every single night he's going to give us this.
I don't really let us down because, like, his production, while it's good, it's not out of this world. It's, you know, 13.6 boards, 1.9 assists, according to Basketball Reference. That's not out of this world. Like, that's what a 6'8 wing who's very polished on offense should give you, maybe not at 19 years old. So maybe that's where it's, you know, a little bit above expectation. But it's not like he's, like, putting up crazy numbers. He's putting up very sustainable numbers.
Yeah, but that's all you can ask for a rookie that you're putting up on
Absolutely.
The wing, for sure. Yeah, and I think there are going to be those nights where he gets up in the 20-25 range. And on eight shots, you can't do much better than 13 unless you get into the free throw line at a high rate, which I guess is one thing you could say about him is you could see a little bit more free throw attempts out of him. You definitely get that from Jaylen Brown more so, I feel like, a little bit more so. And the team as a whole, I feel like, could shoot a little bit more free throws. You know, Irving gets there at a decent rate. But beyond that, I feel like they don't generate enough of those. But that's something we've been talking about for a couple of years now. It feels like the ball creator in this system gets more free throws than the rest of the guys do because it's kind of, you know, drive and shoot. So you're not going to get a lot of free throws on that. But tonight, just a great, great win. And like I said in the opener, they did it in different ways. You talked about the post-ups from Smart. Horford had some nice post-ups tonight. A lot of turnovers, as I said before, but he was very strong in that area. They got out on the fast break. Orlando really just fed them turnovers, and they rolled with it. 13 to 13 was the turnovers. High number for Boston. A lot of those coming from Horford, like I said, but it just didn't seem to hurt them as much because the Magic just were not hitting shots tonight. And before we get to the callers, and I see a number of you, we'll be getting Lydia in just a second. We'll get through the callers real quick tonight. We'll be with you through 9:30 tonight, daylight savings time. Hope you're enjoying it. I'm not. But anyway, 347-215-7771 is your number. It's Bobby Manning. It's Taylor McLeod tonight. The thing I'll say after tonight's game, Taylor, is that you know, there's something that it's interesting the way this team's gelling so well out of the gate. Like, I'm just waiting for them to kind of be solved. You know what I mean? Like, this thing's so new. Teams are just so thrown off by what they're seeing from this team so far. And I think that can be an advantage in a way, an underrated advantage, is the fact that there's just no tape on this team, very minimal tape of this team between the rookies, between the veterans who are playing together for the first time. I'm waiting for them teams to solve the way they play offense, to attack Tatum on the outside and really force him to drive to the rim, you know, try to seal off that Irving Horford pick and roll, easier said than done, but, you know, force some other guys to make plays, keep the ball in Smart's hand, try to get him to make some shots, really force Irving off the ball. I think there's a number of ways teams could attack this offense right now and try to make them more predictable. But tonight kind of tells me that they could do it in other ways. Like I said, did you get a sense that this team is able to adapt to different situations and really score differently than what we used to so far?
Absolutely. And it's not even a scoring thing because, you know, tonight they tried a bunch of stuff on offense and, like, nothing really went super well. Jalen put up his normal 18, which was very nice. He had a good night. But I think it all comes back to the defense. You know, people have been raving about this defense. It's the number one rated defense in the NBA. They held opponents under 100 points for 8 games in a row. And tonight, you know, like I said, they held them to 38 in the first half and then 88 for the game. So I think when your offense is struggling or you can't find your normal flow on offense, you can rely on the defense. And this defense is strong enough to be relied upon.
All right, let's talk to Nick Gelso. He's on the line, so we'll bring him in real quick. Off night for Nick Gelso as the Celtics hit this road trip hard. How you been, Nick?
Good, fellas. How are you guys?
Wonderful.
We're good. Fantastic tonight on another win. And, Nick, we have a lot of Celtics shows at the network. Not a single one of them predicted that this would be the way it would start. In fact, it was quite the opposite. I think every Celtics analyst was saying there'd be bumps out of the road. And, you know, tonight, with the Magic losing a tough game the other night, Celtics high off their comeback win, I thought tonight would be where they would hit that wall against the Orlando team that's been playing pretty good, has a lot of length, size on the interior. But it was just the opposite. I thought this game got messy. And they handled it. They looked like the better team in a messy game than Orlando, who just completely got out of their element.
Yeah, I think you said it all there when you said it. I agree. I think somebody was saying something about the scouting reporter, enough film out. I think that's, and then Nick put me in the screen room, so I couldn't hear. What did you say?
Yeah, so.
That was you?
I'm waiting for the opponents to really get into the swing where they can see what the Celtics are doing, try to stop it. You remember the old way they'd attack Isaiah, really try to force him off the ball and stuff like that. You know, the way they played offense got a little predictable after a while, and I'm waiting for them to be able to adjust to that. And I think tonight was a good example that they're going to be able to do that.
I think that's under discussed because I think it's a really good point. I think we've got to see this team play a second round of games against all these teams that won. And I think the scouting report isn't completely out yet because teams were first scouting for Isaiah and Hayward, then Hayward and Irving. Now Irving and Horford, I mean, it's just been like, I guess as confusing as it could be for the Celtics, probably confusing for teams to scout them right now too. I mean, nobody expected this kind of start. I mean, with Hayward, we were all saying, look at temper expectations, right? There could be some bumps and there's still going to be, because think about it. I mean, you have, you know, Brown and Tatum and Smart. These guys are playing at a super high level. That's not going to maintain throughout the course of the entire year.
Yeah.
So there's going to still be bumps.
And I'm waiting for it to end. Like, you know, every single game I say going in, you know, it looked like last game Tatum and Brown were going to hit that wall, and then they broke out in the fourth quarter. And tonight again, like, they were both there shot for shot producing on a double-digit level in the starting lineup. And that's all they really have to do when they've done it night out.
Yeah, I mean, I could go on and on and on and on and on about Jason Tatum. I mean, I just think he's just amazing. But – Brown, I mean, what really impressed me is he had that tremendous start, and then he went into a shooting slump, but he kept shooting, and he worked his way out of it in 2 games, and, you know, now he's back up to scoring 20 points a game, which is really, I mean, that's a sign of a maturing player, you know, the other thing that's impressed me, of course, like everybody else, has been the rebounding. I mean, it's just been just such an improvement.
They dominated again tonight.
I know. I mean, it's like for how many years going back to the big three era, you just would always be suffocating in the poor rebounding. And the fact that, you know, they're holding their own on the boards, if not winning the boards, kind of lets you breathe a little bit. You can't run the fast break unless you control the boards, right? And it's just what it comes down to. And that's why since Stevens has been here, that's what's been really so frustrating, that and the insistence upon 3-point shooting on bad 3-point shooting teams. Now, this is a good 3-point shooting team, I think.
Yeah, and I think tonight
Stevens in the postgame presser, he was pissed off about the offense.
And, you know, he's been pissed every game throughout this win streak. Like, nothing's been enough for him, and I guess that's the way you like to see it. But through every single win over the stretch, it's been they got to do more. And I'll agree with him tonight. Like, this was not a good offensive night for either side.
No.
I think they won this game more on their defense and their rebounding, like you said.
And poise. I think they had – that's really what's been so impressive, I think, about this team overall is the fact that they are poised. I mean, they don't get rattled. They have great chemistry for not having played together. I mean, because none of them have really played together. And – they're just poised. Like, there's not those long, long scoring droughts where other teams would go on runs and, like, you know, because they hold their own defensively during runs now.
You know, hey, just, Nick, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
So, to backtrack, you said, you know, Jalen, you know, he's been shooting his way out of slumps. You know, something he's still struggling with is just finishing at the rim consistently. Adjust through it. What do you think a realistic ceiling for him is as a scorer, like points per game-wise?
Oh, man, I mean, that's tough because, I mean, he's not a bad shooting. I think he could add 4 to 6, 4 points to his probably a 20-point scorer, 22-point scorer. I think the big thing for him is just, you know, he's so smart. I think he overthinks the game sometimes and his brain gets ahead of him. Like,
I think you're right.
And you see it on free throws, too.
Absolutely.
It's evident when he's shooting free throws. But I mean, you look at him overall, you know, it's because his outside shooting has just improved so drastically this season that it doesn't seem to be quite as obvious that he sucks around the rim, but he still does. I mean, you see it, he bumbles passes around the rim. He's just, I think he overthinks it at that point.
I think
he's
leaving
4 to 6 points on the floor every night.
I think the team as a whole left a lot of points out there tonight on the fast break in particular, not being able to finish in that department. Smart had a few bumbled plays on the fast break. That was an area tonight where I definitely feel like they could have really pushed that lead even more because it was like an 8 to 10 point lead for a little bit through the second and third quarters. Even going into the fourth, it felt like this game was still up for grabs. So I get what Stevens is saying there. They didn't really push this one beyond doubt, even though when Orlando just kept throwing up those complete bricks. It was brick city for them tonight. I just never felt like they had a chance. They never had a chance of getting back realistically, but the door was there for them if they took it.
No, I agree.
So,
Nick,
another question I have for you is Marcus Morris. I was talking about him in the opener. This guy scares me. Like, you know, he's worked through struggles in his first two games and ended up with decent nights, but not without some just horrific stretches of shots where, you know, it's Marcus Smart-esque. You're going to have two Marcuses on this roster throwing up the wildest shots imaginable. And he's even worse. Like, he hit a double clutch shot at the mid-range. It was the elbow, I think, through contact, where I was just like, wow, like, he willed that one in. Like, he had no business making that shot, and he did. Like, I don't know, what are you expecting from this guy? Because Stevens is going to play him in spurts, it looks like.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's his second game back, really. You know, it's frustrating to watch because you want to see more, you know, but it's his second game back. I am impressed with how fast he is, and he does, because
yeah,
watching him in practice, you know, and granted he was injured, but he has been practicing. You know, he just looks like he's in slow motion so often that to see him on the court playing, because I didn't watch a lot of his games last year. I mean, so to see him on the court with playing in these last two games, especially just coming off this injury, I think he's pretty fast, you know.
Yeah.
He adds athleticism and he's fast, man. I mean, I think let's talk about it in 3 weeks or 2 weeks and see if we're still frustrated with the shooting, then, you know, we could bitch about it. But at this point, it's two games. He's got to shoot himself into rhythm, I think. Right?
So eight straight wins, is there anything bad you can say at this point? I know Stevens has had an easy time finding some after every game, but as for you, like, what's missing so far? I know I'm waiting for the point at which opponents really break into them and what they're doing, but right now it just looks like there's nothing, none of that coming anytime soon. They got the Hawks tomorrow who played the Cavs kind of tough tonight, but they're no world beaters
either. Didn't they beat the Cavs?
No. Oh, yeah, they did beat the Cavs tonight. They almost blew it at
the
end, but they held on, yes.
Yeah. I mean, that's That's incredible. I think what really, Bobby, honestly, I've been trying to rack my brain at that, and I think you brought up a really good point when I first come on, which was about the you know, enough there being enough tape on them yet. And I'd like to see them one more time around and hit some Western Conference teams who have film on all these games, and let's see, you know, where they're at then. That's probably my biggest worry. And injury. I mean, the Celtics cannot afford to have one injury at this point. They're fragile that way. You know. And I think also, you know, right now you have, I mean, Kyrie, granted he was quiet tonight, but for the most part, every single player on the team is playing at a really high level. And I think there's going to be points where Al Horford is going to go through a slump. Like, if he keeps this up, man, I mean, whatever. There's going to be some slumps that go around. You know, the rookie legs are going to affect Tatum at some point. You know, so, and that's the issues where I think, you know, their youth and their lack of depth.
Yeah.
It hurts them. So that's probably the only concerns I have. I mean, coming into the season, it was what? Rebounding rollout. They've been great on rebounding. I mean, I think no one
tonight. 50 was unimaginable.
Yeah. It's amazing. I mean, I don't think anybody anticipated the length that Tatum and Brown add at those positions.
Hey, Nick.
You know, I think that's the difference. Yo.
Do you think the youth of Brown and Jason Tatum has made it easier for this team to gel because they're not entrenched in any certain playing form?
Jeez, that's a really good question, man. I think so. Yeah. I mean, I think it helps that they're both so coachable. Brown and Tatum. I mean, they want to be coached. You know, that really helps. Not to pivot, although that was a really great question. I would say yes to answer your question.
Thank you.
Again, I think that they want to be coached. Not to pivot, but that's also where Kyrie's at too, it seems like. You know, as odd of a bird as he may be off the court, on the court, he's pretty effing amazing. And there's no question, he's made no bones about it. He wants to be coached, and it's clear by how he's playing. And it's clear that Brad Stevens' system is just perfect for him. And it's clear that when Hayward comes next year, oh, my God.
And that's another willing passer. That's another great fit. And it's going to be amazing. Even that lineup, once they can throw that up between Tatum and Brown and Hayward playing on the wing and Horford playing inside, that's going to be an incredible lineup.
Let's not forget, I mean, Hayward, I wasn't concerned, but I thought he'd have a little bit of a down year compared to last year. I mean, just to see the period of adjustment as far as moving from city to city, you see how hard he takes things, how thought out he is when he with these blog posts and everything. So, but the fact that he got injured, there's nothing good come out of it. But if anything is positive, it's that, you know, he stayed in Boston. He didn't go back to San Diego, which was a concern. I thought he needed to stay in Boston. And he did, and he's going to be working with the team. So he's building chemistry right now, you know, whenever
he's basically Coach Gordon.
Yeah, I mean, he's part of the coach. And you see he's kind of commenting on social media a little bit here and there. So I think it's awesome. I mean, I think in the long run, you know, when he does get back, he's going to know who his teammates are and have a bond with them already. And that's going to really help.
All right, Nick, great to hear from you,
wait.
As always.
Before
guys, we let
good
you
job.
Go, I want to set a little bit of a bomb off right here between you and Taylor. Cleveland really stinks right now, and I know, Nick, you've been saying this is going to be the year where we just see LeBron call it quits again and just win the situation and leave his exit door wide open from the walkthrough. Are we seeing the early stages of that right now, or are they going to be able to turn it around again like they did last year?
No, I think they'll turn it around at some point. I mean, they're not going to continue to play this bad. but I'll tell you what, they're showing how fragile they are. I think Isaiah coming back is obviously going to help them, depending on how healthy he is, and how long it takes him to come back, and if he's the Isaiah he was, whatever, all those questions. It's going to help them, but it's also – they're going to have a losing skid at that point. Anytime you incorporate somebody for the first time, it's going to goof up your offense. And, you know, so I think they're going to struggle there. But, I mean, I saw it in 2010. You know, they kept crumbled like a house of cards. My God, like, you know, LeBron just stopped playing, you know, in that Eastern Conference. I think it was the semifinals that year. But, you know, I mean, so I think it's ugly there right now. And they don't have a strong coach. And, you know, I mean, I could just go down the line. And when LeBron's not happy, it's not a fun place to be, I don't think.
What do you think, Taylor?
Right? Well, I will never say a bad word about my Lord and Savior, LeBron James. But
oh, God. Oh,
the
no.
Cavs are in trouble. The Cavs are in trouble.
I don't – yeah, man. I think they are. I do. I think they are. I think they're going to get it together. They're still going to be – you know, you know, it's either that or they just don't give a damn at all. They're that confident that they could be an eighth seed and barrel through.
I think there's just too many individual efforts, too many individual egos there with personal interests. Like the prospect of Rose, Wade, even at their advanced ages, sacrificing to the point that they're going to have to.
Derrick Rose
really,
is 28.
Yeah. No, well, yeah, Rose is kind of at an advanced age with his injuries pretty much. So he's a little older than his listed age, but we'll have plenty of Cavs talk as this season goes on. Joe, so we got to get to some of the other callers. Good to hear from you as always.
Yeah, guys.
And we'll
Thanks
talk to you soon.
We'll talk soon. Bye-bye. Good night, guys.
Good night. Good question, Taylor. I think Joseph is going to have to ask that one to Stevens at the next game about the guys being able to adapt due to the undeveloped games. I'd be interested to hear what he thinks about that one. It's kind of going to be that thing where either gives you the most in-depth answer imaginable, or he just kind of like blows it off and like hops on to the next thing. You just never know.
He's learning from my man Billy Belichick.
Yeah, he's not quite there yet, but he'll be there eventually, I'm sure, by the time he's here in like 30 seasons, because it's going to be a long Stevens era. Like, he just cannot see anything going wrong with the way he gets these guys to buy in. And, you know, I'll say this, it's obviously not ironclad, but you look at the Celtics, you know, Hayward was out early. Morris was out for the start of the season, but the guy who's never going to be out on the other side unless he gets ejected is Stevens. And every single night you're going to have to deal with the adjustments he makes, the plays out of timeouts, the way he gets everybody to buy into their roles. Like, you just look at the difference between Cleveland and Boston right now. It's pretty much just the level of which these teams are buying in. And, you know, at the end of the day, talent wins, but it's hard to look at a more valuable piece on this roster than Stevens.
I'd agree, you know, somewhat, but I think at the end of the day, it's a players' league, and I'm always going to think players are more valuable, but, you know, to each their own.
But in this situation where they've been able to adapt to just such hard situations early in this season,
I'm not diminishing the value of Stevens, rather. It's just I tend to fall on the side that players can figure it out.
All right, let's see what the callers think. Lydia in Lauderdale is with us, waiting patiently. Thank you, Lydia. This team's looking pretty good, Lydia. How are you feeling about it?
How about them Boston Celtics, baby? You know, I'm going to bring it. I'm bringing energy. I'm bringing it, and I'm going to keep on bringing it. Y'all, we are 8-2. I have no complaints. But I do want to tell y'all this. I know the last time I called, I was talking about Al Horford being consistent. And he's consistent. I mean, I'm here to talk about Al. He has been consistent. Now, I don't know what the other callers I'm calling about, but I'll tell you this. I don't wish it to go away. So I'm not looking for him to have a slump. I'm not looking for that. So I'm happy what he's doing. I know we played the Orlando Magic today. We all know the Orlando Magic. But I'm going to tell y'all right now, Al is on to something. I'm telling you, he's underrated. I know the commentators was talking on the game today, but he's underrated. And I'm going to tell you, keep sleeping on Al if they want to. They sleeping on him.
Everybody is. They've been doing it.
I love it.
They've been They've been doing it for a long time, Lydia. This guy
has been doing it for a very long time.
He's been the most underappreciated. He's been the most underappreciated player in the league, I'd argue, for the past year and a half. Like the way he impacts his team, he brings everything together amazingly. So he is a given so far. How are you feeling about Marcus Morris? I've been asking everybody this tonight because he's just coming back. You know, there's some wild shots, but I feel like his impact's been good too.
Marcus Morris. Let me see, Marcus Morris. He's, I think once he starts starting, you know, he's in the game now, he's back. I think he's going to get into the system. I think he's just filling out a lot of stuff that's going on. But I'm telling you, I think when Marcus Morris, when he get comfortable, I truly believe he's going to be a serious threat. I mean, y'all see how his brother plays, especially defensively.
Oh, yeah.
I think once he get into the Brad Stevens system, once he get a jam pack, he's gonna be very dangerous especially on defense. And he brings the toughness. You just wait till he get in. I'm telling you, he's our tough guy. Between him and Bane, I think they are tough guys. But it's early right now for him. I think he's just filling out a lot of things. But you just wait till he get comfortable. I think he's gonna be very dangerous when it comes to defense.
So, Lydia, we're early in this season. They've looked amazing so far, just about 10 games in. But have you kind of changed your expectations of this team so far based off how good they look? Do you think they still can do those big things we were thinking about before Hayward went down?
I think so. And I'm going to tell you why. When we played the Oklahoma City Thunder, I think that was our biggest challenge because they got a big three down there in OKC. You got Westbrook. You got Carmelo
Mello.
Anthony and you got Mello and you got
Paul George.
So to me, and then you got Big Adams down there too. I think this is how I believe. I mean, they had a healthy team. We were down how many points? 18.
Yep,
man,
right before the
I'm house. Telling you, I think I want to say the teams better start looking out for Boston because that right there was a call to the league to all the teams to let them know we coming. So to me, that was our biggest challenge this year. I can't say San Antonio because they didn't have
Kawhi.
What's his name back?
Yeah,
you know
Kawhi.
He's Kawhi. You know really couldn't say that was a good challenge. But okay, and then we were in Oklahoma on their floor. Oh,
yeah.
That's amazing. And just imagine if Hayward was with us. Boy, I'm telling you, I think
that's
people
what
are started, they started to notice. Yeah, I truly believe that I think we could take on any team, if you ask me. I know I'm a fan, but I think we could take on any team, if you ask me. We almost beat Cleveland in our first opening. We almost came out to beat them.
They really have looked good across all 10 games. And thank you, Lydia. I needed that energy boost tonight. Great, great call. They could theoretically be 10-0 right now, Taylor. I know when you play that game, it can go both ways. But, they're really – I'm amazed at how few problems have shown themselves through the schedule. And, you know, it's been a weak schedule. I think about 70% of these games, 60% have been weaker teams so far. But I mean, even in those tougher games, the way they bounced back against Cleveland in that one, like, why do you think there's just been so few struggles in a situation where there could be so many?
I think this team is equipped to adapt to many situations. A couple nights ago I was on, and Jason Tatum I think it was against Sacramento. I think he only scored 7 points, but he pulled 11 boards. Tonight no one could get it going on offense, but they played great defense, you know? When something's not working, they find another way to get it done. And like I said, I think that's a sign of a good team, and I think the Celtics are very equipped to do that.
And Keith Smith is on the line. He was at the stadium in Orlando tonight. Real GM, CLNS Media, Celtics blog writer Keith Smith keeping us informed. I really want to get that first-hand description of what went on tonight. Keith, Joso was telling me at the end of this 8-game win streak that Brad Stevens is still fuming about his team's play. What did he say after the game? What's kind of the sentiment out of the locker room? It's his longest win streak ever, but he's still not satisfied, huh?
Yeah, he's not happy with the way the offense is playing. He's really not thrilled with the turnovers, the missed shots, just some of the sloppiness. So, you know, I think it's one of those cases where they won 8 in a row. You got to get on them about something so they don't, heads don't get too big, but, and that's what it is. So we'll see where it goes.
But I've been looking for that down, like just something to criticize tonight, because everything's been going so well so far, minus the injuries. And if you had a hit on one point where you think they really could come a long way, along with all the wins so far, where do you think they need a little bit of a pickup right now?
They got to take care of the ball a little bit better. There was 13 turnovers tonight, but a lot of them were early. They didn't get as many of them late when it turned into garbage time. Then they weren't picking them up. So that was a challenge. They were also kind of sloppy at points, despite how good the defense was. Too many fouls. Orlando was in the penalty with almost 7 minutes to go in the third quarter, and that could have led to a big comeback. Fortunately, it didn't. So that's a couple of things that they need to clean up. But those are fairly easy things to clean up.
So to me, it looked like a murky game tonight watching on TV. Like the amount of turnovers, the bad offense on both sides. I felt like poor shooting nights for both teams for the most part. It got murky, and I felt like the Celtics got out of the element, things they've been doing well so far, and were able to win a different way. What can you say about, the versatility of this team and the way they can adapt to different situations so far?
Yeah, I think it's a situation where this team's comfortable to win ugly, and I think that's almost how they want to win. I think right now, because they don't have that offensive cohesiveness because of being such a new group together, that they're going to ugly these games up and win them. In a way, it's funny, they remind me of that 08 team where it was, let's get in there and let's get after these teams, and if they can't score, they can't win. And I think that's how this group really has adopted that mindset of let's get after it and make them work for everything that they get.
Hey, Keith, Taylor McLeod here. I'm wondering, Aaron Gordon, we've seen his transformation from just a dunker to, kind of extending his game out to the mid-range, and now he's shooting some more threes. Do you see a Blake Griffin-like transformation overall for him?
Yeah, he's not the passer that Blake is. Blake was A-level passer from moment one in the league, so Aaron's got to really step up that part of his game. But he has become an outstanding shooter. One of the big things, I did a lot of video work on him, and it's his balance this year. There's no lean in his shot at all. He's straight up and down, almost square to the hoop. So he's really making that leap from good player and dunk contest guy to a true star in the NBA.
Awesome.
Keith, last point I got is on this Orlando team. We've been kind of talking about, they've looked good so far, but tonight it really took a turn for the worse. And I know they were without Elfrid Payton, but it just felt like they were throwing up bricks all night long. I know you get more of a look at the Magic than most people do, but are they legit playoff contenders in the East, or are they pretenders like Taylor seems to think? It did not look good tonight, but overall it has so far for them.
Yeah, they're definitely playoff contenders. Now, that doesn't mean that they're going to win a series or anything like that. But, the bottom of the East is such a mess that you have to be truly terrible to not be a playoff contender. And they're not that. So they'll definitely be in the mix. And they were shooting so well from the floor, coming in especially from three, that it was bound to drop off, which it has in the last two games. You didn't expect it to maybe crater the way it has. But now if it levels back out to a more reasonable amount, this team looks pretty good. They're going to be pretty solid all the way through.
And we've been saying this a little bit tonight too about the Cavaliers, and we'll get you going in just a second here. But I felt like we went through this last season, and here we go again with the Cavaliers struggles. Like, how much do we buy into how bad things look there right now?
Yeah, I think this year more so than what you've seen the past couple of years, you've got to buy into this because it didn't look this bad. And that's the challenge. They are letting up points. I mean, they're the worst defense in the NBA right now. So that is a massive challenge for them. They are unable to stop anybody. It was the Atlanta Hawks tonight who came in shorthanded and just rolled over them with 117 points. They scored 37 points in both the first and third quarters, which is when you expect a team to come out on fire at home to start each half, and they're just not doing it. The other piece is they're older. They have a much older roster up and down, so that's going to cause them a lot of struggle if they can't get this righted. Now, I'm not going to bet against the LeBron James team. I'm not that stupid, but I will say there's definitely signs for concern that this group may not get it together like they have the past few years.
All right, Keith, thanks for taking a minute to talk to us down there from Orlando. Look forward to reading what you're writing tonight. CelticsBlog.com. Keith Smith, thanks for being with us, man.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Gus.
All right, there's Keith Smith from Orlando. They didn't look too good from the Magic tonight, but like you said, you got to be real bad to not be a contender in the East this year for the playoffs. It's going to be a wild run this year in the East, Taylor. I mean, every team is just so much different from what we've seen before. For the, like, up and down this East, we talked so much about how the Celtics have changed, but a lot of these teams have changed. Like, Detroit looks like a completely different team this year. Charlotte, with Dwight Howard now, playing much differently. They have been great to start this year. Even the Knicks, post-Carmelo, it's been a little different with Porzingis running the show there now as well. So I don't think we can really expect anything out of the East right now. Things are just going to get completely wacky this year, I feel like. Once injuries set in as well, too, things just change everywhere. But what I saw tonight, and I haven't hit on this yet, and we're going to get Nick Cicento in here right now. The Celtics, we know how good they've been at defense so far. And one thing I'll say about teams that have length is you can sense that when they're playing offenses with their length and really getting in their head contesting shots, you see the opponent become tentative. You see shots that usually go down, go way off. And you see teams take shots that they probably aren't used to taking. Bad quality shots, good quality shots that don't go as well as you'd expect. Like, the offense just gets completely out of whack when these teams with length go against these offenses. We've seen it with the Bucks the past few years. Can we say that about the Celtics now? Because I saw that tonight, Nick.
Well, if you look at Jaylen Brown, I think Jaylen Brown is a fantastic example of that length. I think he's a solid defender, but even more so, Jason Tatum, who I was going through my iPad. I had to clear up some space because I was running out of storage space. I don't have the password to my cloud. And I'm looking at the video, the introduction video not the intro of like the press conference, but like one of those little mixes they make, the Boston Celtics make for when, for their new rookies after they get drafted. And I was looking at the Jason Tatum mix, and they listed him at 6'8" with the wingspan of 6'11". I don't think those are his stats anymore. I think he's more like 6'9", and I think his wingspan has surpassed 7 feet easily. This team has a lot of length. Is not tall. And Daniel Tice also, long arms. He seems to kind of have a little bit of Birdman in him. This team is not tall. There's not a lot of height on the team. But height doesn't matter as much because you're not blocking shots or affecting shots or defending shots with your head. You're blocking shots and defending shots and contesting with your hands and your arms. So to have a team that has wingspan like this is an advantage, which is one of the reasons why you see the Milwaukee Bucks building their team almost entirely around length. They have the longest team in the league. They have guys like Giannis Antetokounmpo, Thon Maker, those guys that have all incredible length, and I think that's the key to this positionless basketball that players are playing, because you can have guys, for example, Terry Rozier, who's only 6'2" or 6'1", you know, not a very tall player, but the wingspan that he has that extends him out to maybe, you know, 6'8", 6'7", something like that. I'm not exactly sure of the exact wingspan of Terry Rozier. He's able to contest shots on taller players along with his athleticism and ability to get vertical to contest shots. He puts that long arm out there, and his size, his actual height doesn't matter as much as his ability to extend, to stretch those long arms and to contest shots.
And Taylor, how much this defensive improvement's been nuts, because their defense is going to stay number one in the league by a lot after tonight, holding the Magic to 80 some points. Is it more we've talked about the rebounding and how that seals up possessions and keeps you steady on that end, and we've talked about the length as well. What's been a bigger deal in this improvement, you think? Is it the fact that they're not giving up as many second chance points, or are they just defending better straight up in the half court?
The rebounds.
Yeah, I think it's rebounds. When you don't give teams multiple chances in one possession to score the basketball, it looks better. And I just think they got some dogs now. Like, I think that Aaron Baines and Daniel Tice and even guys like Jaylen Brown wants it. Kyrie's leading the league in steals. They got guys who want to play hard on defense. Plus, their point guard is in 5'8".
And I think that's a good point. You know, tonight's the magic. But on Friday, like, they dominated that big team on the boards as well. You got Adams, you got Melo in there who had a big rebounding game, but they still won that rebounding battle. So I look at the defense and say, you know, you got some guys playing up maybe above their caliber right now in defense, but this rebounding looks like it can be sustainable, Nick.
Bobby, I got a couple of stats for you real quick since we're on the topic of rebounding. And I went through I put these stats together last show, but it's easy just to add the stats from this game and throw them in. The Boston Celtics have out-rebounded their opponents in 7 of their 9 games this season and in their last 6 games. Tonight they out-rebounded the Orlando Magic 54-45, so that's 9 rebounds. If you look at their total rebounding, if their total plus or minus or whatever, their total aggregate rebounding, +8 against the Bucks, +1 Miami, +14 against the Spurs. Of course, they were out some of their players. +26 against the Kings. That's insane. +1 against Oklahoma City and +9 against Orlando. Their aggregate total, they're +59 on the boards this season. Total out-rebounding opponents by an average of 8.5 rebounds per game. We haven't seen this from the Boston Celtics in, I don't know. I don't know how long. Maybe the KG days, and I don't even think back then they were rebounding quite like this.
No.
The crazy thing is, even those teams, as dominant as they were back then, championship teams, their weak spot was rebounding. Like, we have not seen this in decades.
No, definitely not. And because Doc Rivers is one of those guys that just get back on – it wasn't just the defensive rebounding or the inability to defensive rebound, but on offensive glass, don't even bother. Just shoot your shot and get back on defense. That was Doc Rivers' philosophy. He admitted openly that he didn't focus on offensive rebounds or really place that much of an emphasis on rebounds at all. And now you have a guy like Brad Stevens and players that can – that's the key to this team. It's not just the rebounds and not just the defense and not just the length. All of those things are encompassed in the fact that this team is extremely versatile and has a roster up and down that is versatile and can play multiple positions on offense and can shift and rotate to multiple positions on defense and guard multiple positions. It's conceivable that a guy like Jaylen Brown has the speed to guard many of the point guards in this league. He has the speed to stay in front of them. Jason Tatum has the speed to guard and the length to guard players from the 2 to the 4. It's conceivable that these guys can basically switch all around, and on top of that, on offense, they can all shoot threes and spread the floor. The versatility, I think, is really the key that goes along with the rebounding and the defense, and basically is all just the part of the special mix for this Boston Celtics team.
And rebounding is a part of all of these guys' games, up and down the roster. Scal and Mike were talking about it tonight, rebounding by committee. Like, all of these guys can step in and grab a board when they need to, and that's part of the versatility you're talking about. We got 9 minutes left, so I want to let the listeners know that this episode is sponsored by Greats, the maker of all-time greats, and that's classic, stylish, and comfortable sneakers sold at a great price. Great shoes, great price. And we're going to make it even better for you. A special deal for our audience. Save 15% on your first order with our offer code CelticsRoundtable. That's one word, CelticsRoundtable. Visit greats.com, see what they got, see those prices, and take even more off with our code CelticsRoundtable. 7 minutes left to go here on the program. Nick, we're going to keep you around, but we're going to pull in Isaiah from New Jersey as well to cap off the show.
Love it.
We've hit on a lot, Isaiah, so thanks for waiting. Is there anything you think we missed tonight that you want to bring up?
What's going on, fellas? How's everything with you? Great Celtic win tonight. Great conversation as usual. Not really. Celtics are great, man. I think you guys were talking about it the last time about Brad Stevens. I mean, is there any question he's the MVP of the team? I mean, he's the most valuable asset that we have. He's the professor of Celtic University. I mean, everyone that comes through the door seems to get better by not just better, but by leaps and bounds. I mean, guy's the guru. So I just wanted to add my 2 cents in on that. And other than that, I got a couple of points I just wanted to make. Like, the Celtics offense is awesome. I think that it just flows. We have a bunch of players with multiplicity. They can do a lot of things, and they can fit. They can check off a lot of boxes. So even on nights where you have Al being off, you have so many other guys that can add 5 to 10 points per game. You know, you don't need the guys that are scoring 20 points a night. We already have that. We just need everyone to contribute and chip in a little. The ball seems to be moving. Everyone's buying into Brad's philosophy. The ball never sticks. I watch a lot of NBA basketball, and it seems like the Celtics, their offense is just humming. I mean, imagine if Hayward was here. What would we look like then? I mean, we'd be a juggernaut. you know. But I love what Brad is doing with the team right now. Offense looks great. And bigger than the offense, the thing that we're doing every single night is we're playing defense. Whether the offense shows up or doesn't, I think you guys were saying that Brad was upset with the offense tonight. Well, that's a coach. He's going to nitpick the team and kick them in the butt and find a reason for them to stay motivated. But the thing that we've been doing and the thing that I think everyone's been surprised about this season is that the Celtics bring their hard hat every single night. There's not a night that we can say that they don't win. Like Nick said, it's not a night that we can say that they don't win on the glass. I mean, you got to bring your hard hat every day in order to win on the glass, and we're doing that handily. And on top of that, we're switchable. The same multiplicity that we have on offense is there on defense in spades. We're long, so we're cutting off passing lanes. The passing lanes aren't open like they are for other teams. There's no easy lanes to the basket.
And Taylor, you had a stat coming into tonight. I don't know what it is now, but before the game, Scal was talking about Horford as maybe defensive player of the year. What was the stat you threw at me after he said that?
I'm pretty sure that opponents are shooting less than 30% when guarded by Horford.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he has been in his element too there. And before we end the show, we got about 4+ minutes right now. The one thing I didn't hit on tonight is that bench dynamic. Rozier, Smart. I feel like there's a little bit of a friendly battle going on right there right now. And, you know, I feel like Rozier's had the upper hand so far with how he's played offense. But then Smart comes back tonight with a +32. And this was his element. This was his kind of game. Messi laid his impact on the game with defensive plays, rebounding, assists. So how are you guys feeling about that battle so far? We'll start with Nick. Who do you think's got the upper hand right now?
I'm going to say this just because I know Isaiah is going to completely disagree. But I like Terry Rozier, and I actually gave thought because the last time this topic was brought up when Isaiah was on the show, and this is what a good guest will do, is he'll make you think about your position and reassess the facts in order to evaluate your opinion. So I went back and I looked at it, and the point that Isaiah brought up was that Marcus Smart is more advanced at running an NBA offense because that's what he has been groomed to do since he was drafted. He played behind Isaiah Thomas, and he was supposed to come up and be that, you know, that next young man to run that offense. He is certainly a better ball distributor and a better, you know, a better player at bringing the ball up the court and initiating the offense. But I think just as Marcus Smart was rough at that. He wasn't great at that in his first season, and he got better as the seasons, you know, progressed. That's one of the things that he has gotten better at, especially since I would say about the midpoint of last season, if not earlier. Terry Rozier can be groomed in the same way. And once Terry Rozier is able to actually bring the ball up court and initiate an offense without just being on, you know, 99 miles an hour, 120 miles an hour nonstop, if he can be groomed to, you know, slow it down a little bit when need be and initiate a half-court offense, he is a better, more productive player and a more reliable, consistent player than Marcus Smart. The thing we love about Marcus Smart is the fact that he gives you these crazy things, these hustle things, and these intangible things. But I think that when it comes to measurables, that's what you can rely on. And I think Terry Rozier is going to be a player that's going to give you better measurables overall through the arc of his career. And all it takes, because of his size, is to groom him to be able to be a better floor general.
Isaiah?
Now, you know I'm going to disagree with you, Nick. I'm going to disagree with you simply because, first of all, when Marcus first got to the Celtics, he wasn't groomed to be anything. He was the jack of all trades. He was the spackle man. They put him everywhere to do everything.
Spackle man, I like that.
He was spackle man. He did everything.
Spackle man.
So we all know that Marcus was not groomed.
Evan Turner part two.
Exactly. They threw him everywhere, and he didn't get to develop until really, what, last year at some time? I think we were on the phone, Bobby, when we talked about this, when we talked about how Marcus didn't get the opportunity to really run a team. And now that he's gotten the opportunity, I think those point guard skills are there. With Terry, I don't see it. I see Terry as I'm going to use the Avery Bradley comp. I think Danny was comfortable getting rid of Avery because he already had Avery's replacement on the bench. And I like what Rozier does in the role that he's in. He definitely has a role that he can come in, be the sixth man, be the seventh guy off the bench. He can score. That's one thing we know he can do is score. But to say that he could develop as a point guard and be the secondary point guard, I don't know about that. And the question I'm going to ask you, Nick, is why would I want to do that when I already think I have the best backup point guard in the league in Marcus? Like, think about that. Before we were talking about Marcus taking over, last year we spent time talking about Marcus taking over as the primary point guard. But because of Kyrie, that changes the perspective on Marcus. Everyone agrees that Marcus could probably start in the league, but we don't need him to. Why not just relish him in the role that he's in, that he's thriving in? He knows he's the backup point, and he's part of the multiplicity that the Celtics have on defense. And not only that, one thing that he does that Terry can't do is that Marcus is the tip of the spear. He will guard anyone. He's our Navy SEAL. When it's time for us to put in the go guy, the gadget guy, Marcus comes in and does whatever we need him to do while running the point.
Taylor, you're the tiebreaker. What do you got to say?
So I've agreed with Nick every time we've talked about this because Marcus Smart frustrates me to no end, and he still frustrates me, always will. But then he takes a 7-footer, the human palm tree, Jonathan Isaac to the low block, gets a bucket, next possession drills a three. So I just don't know anymore. Like he's the faculty.
And it's so hard to gauge him because one minute he's doing infuriating things, then the next he's making game-winning plays. And I guess you got to just boil it down to consistency.
Well,
and neither of these guys have really proven to be consistent yet, which is the tough part about it.
But what is it that he's doing that it's totally infuriating besides his shooting? The only problem
shooting's
that people
a big,
have
big
with
part
Marcus
of the game,
is his shooting. It is. But on this team, we're not talking about any other team. On this Celtic team, with the way that they're scoring, think about it. Brad's upset, and we scored over 100 points tonight. We don't need Marcus to be what everyone needs him to be. We just need Marcus to fit and play his role. Before, we didn't know what his role was. Now it's defined. He's the
right,
leader
but
of the second
but Isaiah. But Isaiah, mm-hmm. Let me just point this out to you. We also don't mm-hmm. need Marcus Smart to be that type of point guard that's the floor general setting up everybody else, because if you look at this team, there's how many players? There's three players that have four or more assists per game, and then you have Terry Rozier averaging two and a half, Shane Larkin in minimal minutes averaging two assists per game. Every player on the team, when Gordon Hayward comes back, probably average about four or five assists per game. This team doesn't – it's positionless basketball. This team doesn't need a player like Marcus Smart to be a backup point guard or a starting point guard, because there's so many players on this team that can pass that you don't need somebody to do that. And – shooting is a huge part of the game. I'm sorry, but when you have Terry Rozier and you line him up to Marcus Smart, he just shoots better in every facet of the game. Two-pointers, three-pointers, free throws. He shoots better than Marcus Smart in every facet of the game. It's true. I'm looking at the stats right now on Basketball Reference. A field goal percent, 38% for Terry Rozier. Marcus Smart is shooting 30% from field goal. I'm glad that he can back. He can get on the block and guard bigger players. That's fantastic. I love that. That's great that a shooting guard or a guy that's 6'4" can do that. But if you're shooting 30% from the field and 29% from three, The point of basketball, at the end of the day, is putting the hoop,
the ball
into the hoop. That's it. That's the key. Everything else facilitates that aspect of the game.
Let me ask you this, Nick. What's Terry shooting from three?
He's shooting about 32% from three.
Is that much different than 29%? You're acting like he's Klay Thompson. This guy is not
shooting as well as you guys think he is.
Terry's
he's been in the league less
guy,
time and had less time to develop the shot. We've been working on the Celtics have been working on Marcus Smart's shot for 3 years, and it's just not going. He showed promise last season, especially the second half of last season after he injured his ankle or whatever he was doing, and he was shooting baskets during Christmas break or whatever it was he was doing. He came back and started shooting threes consistently, was picking and choosing his shots. It's not just the bad percentage, Isaiah. It's the fact that he'll go some nights 3-for-10 from three or 3-for-11 or 1-for-12 sometimes. We saw some insane numbers.
Okay.
It's not just the percentage. It's the choices, the shots that he chooses to take that are the problem and the percentage that he's not hitting in that vast amount of shots that he's taking.
I'm not
saying that you're wrong in any sense of the word, but what I'm saying is If you close your eyes right now, if you close your eyes right now and ask yourself who makes more winning plays for the Celtics and who makes more impact plays for the Celtics, who comes to mind?
Marcus Smart does right now, but he has a year he has a year extra in the league, and he's also playing about 5 minutes more per game. He has a bigger role so far. I think if you were to switch their roles and give and Terry Rozier were in the league a year longer than Marcus Smart,
I think if you switch their roles, Marcus would still make impact plays in the limited time. Marcus is just one of those players. I think that you're comparing the stats and what you see. I can't even say that because you actually see Marcus making winning plays. Like you just said, Taylor, he came down, he posted up Isaac, and then he comes down and he hits a three. He had a stretch where he had, 5 or 8 points in a row?
Yeah.
Like, he's streaky. Yeah. He's the ultimate streaky player on offense. But on defense, totally consistent. And on game-winning plays, he's consistent. And Terry's not shooting that much better than I'm going to take the game-winning plays that Marcus makes. I'm not going to take that out the lineup for a guy who's shooting 3% better.
Yeah, and you got to think about, how special Smart's defense is where you can play him 1-4. Like, that is not something you can compare to Rozier. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
His defense is all league.
I'm just going to say it's an interesting conversation this year because Rozier's been getting more and more minutes on the ball. You're going to have Smart hanging free agency this summer, which I know drives Isaiah crazy. You never know with Danny Ainge. If Rozier just keeps making his value felt more and more, I'm just worried that that might be some leverage they try to use on him. So it'll be interesting to see going forward.
Well, guys,
we got to go, Isaiah. Give us the final word if you'd like.
Well, guys, I love the conversation with you guys. I love everything you're saying, but I think that Danny's not done. As much as I think that, as much as the team is together, I have a feeling that Danny's not done. I got a feeling that guys like Rozier, who are looking really good right now, are really trade bait. And I think the target,
Isaiah, real quick.
Yes?
Marcus Smart is coming up on restricted free agency and is going to get offers. He's not going to be Kelly Olynyk that's going to be, hanging around until we just don't need him no more, until the Celtics don't need him no more. Marcus Smart's going to get offers. Terry Rozier still has this year and next year left on his rookie contract. He's still going to be a cheaper option. We know how Danny Ainge, if he's still making moves, he's going to need some of that cap space. If he's going to have to spend $10,000, $12,000, possibly $15,000 for the best backup point guard in the NBA that can guard the 1-4 spot, he might decide he can't afford that and keep Terry Rozier on just because it's so close that the salary might be the difference maker.
But what if
the guy I'm thinking about
is Anthony Davis, and the package that I see because think about it. I see Al going. All you Celtics fans that hated Isaiah going, I see Al going. I see Jaylen Brown going. I see Terry Rozier going.
And possibly
that Laker pick for Anthony Davis.
Keep the Laker pick. Draft Marvin Bagley.
I would keep the Laker pick if I could. That's why it's an and/or. But I see
Bagley
it coming. I see Al coming up on his last year. I see some things happening.
That's a good way to end it. Beautiful talk tonight, guys. Isaiah, thanks for calling in. Nick, great takes as always, and Taylor McLeod holding it down the co-host spot. I'm Bobby Manning. That's the Celtics postgame show tonight. We will see you tomorrow night again. We're back. Celtics and Hawks. Good night, everybody.